New research this week in the journal Neuroscience News out of the University of California, confirming what we know, that adults have poorer cognition but better well-being as they age. Significantly worse symptoms of depression, anxiety and loneliness are seen in younger people, actually, which has never seemed fair, while older people evince greater mental well-being, along sometimes with a fading brain. But we also know that there are interventions that improve brain function as we get old, which we've talked about a lot on the show, and the study underlines this aspect. Let's talk about interventions with Dr. Ali Hill from the Human Nutrition Department of Otago University. We chat with Ali regularly. Kia ora, Ali.
Morena.
Morena. Just as I had finished reading a local article this past week on how the only vitamin capsules that are really useful for you are zinc, magnesium and vitamin D, sometimes folic acid, and that multivitamin tablets are easily replaced by a decent diet, comes this US university research, Ali, that seems to get a cautious tick from America's Alzheimer's Association, and it reckons a daily multivitamin can keep your memory sharp as you age. What are we supposed to conclude after decades of yo-yoing on this?
I think initially when you look at it, it does look promising. But the thing about vitamin and mineral pills is they're most effective when we're deficient. So if we don't get enough from our diet, that's when they can be useful. The problem that we've got with multivitamins is that they tend to have at least 100% of the recommended level, which really doesn't take into account anything else that you eat or drink during the day. And because of that, you're more likely to have an overdose. So there are definitely some vitamins that are useful. Folic acid is one, for instance, if you're trying to have a baby or in the first 12 weeks of pregnancy as well, because it can reduce spinal cord defects. But other things, there's probably less relevance for it. And we'd always say to go with food first if you can, because you get such a wide range of other nutrients from it, not just the vitamins and minerals.
No, exactly. I suppose the question in this day and age is, how many people are deficient in daily diets? And that's when it starts to assume importance, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But there's definitely probably the bigger issue that we have at the moment is having too much of them. And there have been some studies that had to stop because the having too much of a vitamin was actually quite negative. So there was one or a couple of them done with beta carotene, which is converted into vitamin A, and they had to stop giving the supplements because people had a higher risk of lung cancer who were taking them.
Yeah, that's pretty serious. Magnesium. Magnesium is touted as being able to promote sleep and boost energy. And in one of the science mags online, Ali, the different brands abroad are ranked for efficacy. And I noticed that the makers of health supplements emphasize their tried and true status, how long the company's been around and so on, kind of implying that other brands may be knockoffs that aren't the real deal. What is your view of making sure, first of all, that you have enough magnesium, maybe if your diet's a bit short of vegetables, and also your opinion on whether different health brands are superior, or are they all giving us much the same quality, do you think?
Yeah, so you get magnesium in, as you say, in your diet, so things like legumes, nuts, seeds, or even if your breakfast consists of fortified cereals, milk and yogurts and things like that, then you're going to get quite a good level of magnesium anyway. And again, one of the problems that you've got is having too much. So if you have too much magnesium, you're going to get diarrhea, which means you possibly won't be absorbing other nutrients as well. And I guess the other point about being around for longer doesn't necessarily mean much. If you're relying on history and what's been done for the longest, then we'd probably still be seeing if women were witches by dunking them in ponds, whereas really the quality isn't necessarily related to that. So you kind of need to think about what else is in there and whether it's there for a reason.
That's very hard for the average person like me, for example, to know if you're presented with 10 different brands of a vitamin.
Oh, absolutely. And that's another reason why it's easier to go with food first rather than going with supplements.
A new study links ultra-processed foods with colorectal cancer in men. And this is out of Tufts University, which has a good reputation, and Harvard as well. What are ultra-processed foods as opposed to just processed foods, please?
Well, this is actually the kind of the crux of the question. We don't really know. There's no universally, there's no definition that everybody accepts for an ultra-processed food, which kind of confuses the research a little bit. But we do know that there is a link between processed meats like ham, bacon and salami and cancer. So the World Health Organization tells us that. But in terms of the ultra-processed foods, it might be, you know, it's hard to define, but these kind of foods tend to be high in added sugars and not have as much fiber. And these are things that we know have a major impact on health. But again, it's kind of difficult to separate these types of foods with general diet or whether it's the fact that it's ultra processed, or is it other lifestyle factors that are affecting this? You know, it's so difficult to tell apart.
This research, as I said, comes out of two big universities. It seems interesting that men are at risk from ultra-processed foods, but somehow women are not.
Yeah, the study design's really interesting. It's a massive study, which is great. It's got something like 200,000 participants in it. But then that also means that the way that you measure diet has to take that into account. It's obviously not practical to measure 200,000 food diaries every day for 25 years. So they did a kind of measurement which we call a food frequency questionnaire, which is basically kind of questions working out how much of each type of food did they have, which relies a lot on memory. So again, that's going to affect the accuracy. And another interesting factor with the study is that there's a big gender difference. So about 3/4 of them were female, which is relevant when you think about the fact that males are generally at higher risk of colorectal cancer than females are as well. And they don't know necessarily, was it the fact that they were eating these ultra-processed foods or what their diet was made up of in terms of this, what the composition of it was as well. And also the population that they looked at is going to affect it. So all the females were nurses and the males were health practitioners. And so other factors like shift work, which we know affects dietary choice and how frequently you can eat, and it reduces your activity level as well. So these kind of things could all be at play here.
Which I presume they would have at least thought of, even if you can't say they factored them in and that's not clear. But the study's authors say not all ultra-processed foods are equally harmful with regard to colorectal cancer risk. In fact, for women, the supermarket yogurts, for example, are beneficial, and they're not sure why, which is also mysterious.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense. So supermarket yogurts could contain the good bacteria and the probiotics and also the food that they need, the prebiotics. But there is a difference between different types of yogurt, which I guess comes down to how they've defined ultra-processed food. So some are really high in sugar. So the fruit yogurts that you think are actually quite good for you aren't necessarily. You might do better just having a plain yogurt and adding fruit to it.
What about the different effect on women? As you say, women outnumbered men in the study, but nevertheless, they did look at the women themselves, and the consumption of ultra-processed foods didn't seem to affect them in the way it affects men.
Yeah, and they thought this might be down to the different kind of composition of foods that they're having, so that might be a difference as well. But, I mean, we do know that, you know, men and women are different when it comes to nutrition as well, so it's not altogether surprising that there could be a difference there.
So essentially women are eating better than men, possibly.
I don't know that I could quantify that. That's quite a broad question, really.
I suppose it's just my inference. I'm just quoting now from the study before we leave it. The potential role of food additives in altering gut microbiota, promoting inflammation, and contaminants formed during food processing or migrated from food packaging may all promote cancer development, unquote. I mean, that's quite a statement. It's enough to make you want to only eat food you grow yourself, Ellie.
Oh, absolutely. And that you have to bear in mind that they are just talking about, like, one aspect of food, and all food is going to be processed, and a lot of it, you know, depending on how you store it as well. So it's still potentially all linked to it. And obviously it would be great if everybody could grow their own food, but realistically that's not always possible.
No. The science magazine Stat News Online notes it's suddenly hot to discuss gut diseases like IBS, which is good. And I see in New Scientist there's a big piece on how we inherit our gut microbes across generations, which I've never thought of, but it's common knowledge, I guess, to people like you. The quality of our mother's microbiomes has an effect on you and me?
Yeah, definitely. So as the baby's born, as it goes through the birth canal, there's loads of bacteria in there. So it just gets to experience all of that on the way out. And then it comes through breast milk as well. So if you're breastfeeding your baby, then there'll be some bacteria that will pass that way too.
So if some gut microbes behave as though they're part of the human genome, would this mean that they're somehow resistant to our efforts to look after our guts better? We're stuck with mum microbes?
I think the way that I tend to think about this is it's a bit like a garden. So the seeds might be there, but the growing conditions need to be right as well. So I'm not aware of any research that says that that's the only thing that you're stuck with. And I think, you know, different conditions, different eating different types of food will also affect the types of bacteria that are there as well.
Just a couple more things. A study reported in New Scientist reckons that rheumatoid arthritis could be treated by eating probiotic bacteria, inferring this from a study of rats. It's quite complicated in the reading of this, but does it seem to have credence to you? I mean, again, it's early days, but also seems exciting, this?
Yeah, it's quite interesting because they're coming at it at a slightly different angle from what I was expecting. So we know that probiotics alter gut bacteria. So we know that if you eat more of the probiotics, then your beneficial bacteria is going to go up as well. And we also know that there's some evidence to say that they're anti-inflammatory. So when I first read this, that was the angle that I assumed that they were going to go down. But really what happened is that they were looking at a type of medicine that's injected, and it's actually made from venom of sea anemone, of all things. If you inject this, then it's potentially has good impact because it reduces the inflammation. And so what they did is they genetically altered some probiotics to kind of produce a similar type of peptide to the sea anemone. And they found similar results, which is more beneficial because if you have a probiotic, you can actually eat it, so you don't need to inject it. So there's definitely it is early days, but it's definitely an area of interest, I think.
It's one of those discoveries that make us think that in 5 or 10 years, a number of terrible ailments like rheumatoid arthritis could in fact be things of the past.
And that would be wonderful, isn't it? Wouldn't it? Like, that's just kind of the way that medicine evolves and science understanding improves as well. And it all works to kind of improve our lives generally.
Well, we know now how the gut talks to the brain as well as the body, as it were, and it's vital that all is well down there. Do you think there are more gut discoveries to come?
Oh, I think there's loads of gut discoveries to come. We're only really starting to begin to understand it, really. So I think it's definitely an area of interest and something that we're just going to keep finding out more information about.
Great to have you give us your time, Dr. Ali Hill. Thanks so much.
Thank you.